Okay, let's start by chanting the Metta Sutta, the Buddha's words on loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, a meeting man, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living here and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, upward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Okay, welcome to another weekly installment of the Monday Night Meditation Group. Lovely to see you all here today, so thanks for coming along, it's very encouraging. I think I'm going to have to start taking bookings soon, because it's pretty popular, which is nice, which is good. Yes, as you can see, Sukha Kamo and Ajahn Satuti have been busy improving the shrine. It's still a work in progress, but it's coming along, which is nice. And yeah, we've just had a week with some visiting monks, so some old friends of ours. Ajahn Kemavara came over from Sydney. He's a Vietnamese-born American monk, now living in the wilds of Darug National Park in north of Sydney, which is a pretty cool place to visit if you happen to be in that part of the world. And he was here with Ajahn Chaipon, who's a Thai monk from Ajahn Dunn's monastery over in Thailand. So it's very nice to have them here for a full week. Was certainly a frenetic time. very, very busy week, especially for Santuti, who was going out on these various trips to visit the monasteries, visit Bodhnyana Monastery, visit Dhammasara Nuns Monastery, and so forth. Plus a few tourist attractions, of course. Part of the journey, so they've got the two monks have gone back to New South Wales now, and Santuti is staying with his mummy now. So he took the toolbox with him, so I think he's got a few jobs to do there. that's right, you know. It's that's what he's good at. He's a handyman, so. Apart from being a good meditation teacher and abbot of this place. And now we've got Jan. Jan has gone on a 9-day retreat. So he's getting fully brainwashed for the next 9 days with Ajahn Brahmali, who is does these lovely sutta retreats, which are very popular these days. So he incorporates readings from the suttas, often on topics related to meditation, as well as teaching the meditation itself and that sort of thing. So it's a 9-day retreat. He'll be back on Sunday. So that just leaves the three of us here, myself and Suga Kamar and Rob, and I'm quite looking forward to having a very nice quiet time while Ajahn Sethi is away. He hasn't given us too many projects to work on, so it's all good. Anything else that's happening that people would be interested in? No, that's about it. So tonight we have the meditation group, and as usual, I will say a few words on the practice and that sort of thing. Is there anyone here who has never meditated before? No? Easy, that's good. We just go meditate for half an hour to see you. Relax. It's just sitting in meditation. I mean, as I always have to do. And before I go on, I should mention that there is another a half-day retreat as well coming up on the 6th of July, I think it is, according to the sign up there. We just had another half-day retreat with Ajahn Kamar. I heard there's some people got some good meditation on that, and a lot of people had a good time anyway, so that's all good. Next week, Sentu will be away, so I'll be here again. Anyway, so meditation. So I try and think of something new to talk about each week, which is always interesting. They do say that it's good for senior teachers to get out and teach because it makes them spend some more time contemplating their own practice and where they're at and the whole process. It's a good so teaching is a good way to learn. And what I've been thinking about recently, just the idea of the practice of meditation as a kind of journey. So we start meditation, we sit down, and we have all sorts of expectations of what meditation is supposed to be about. And how it's supposed to, what sort of states we'd like to attain, how long we'd like to spend watching the breath, or being silent, or practicing metta. But often the practice of meditation is, say you're sitting down for half an hour, it's almost like a little half-hour journey, and as you practice, as you sit there for the period that you've set aside for meditation, you'll notice that it's not an all or nothing thing. We don't just sit down and say, okay, now I'm going to focus on the breath. I'm going to watch the breath for the next 30 minutes. That tends to be the way most of us approach meditation. But actually what happens is as you sit there, the flow of the meditation takes over, and it's like going through along a path, and there's various sights to be seen. Some of them are very pleasant, some of them are not so pleasant, and that's okay. The main thing is that you just keep travelling with the present moment, and when something comes up, whether it's really enjoyable, or you might be having some, all sorts of thoughts about good and bad things, and the practice is just to sit there and acknowledge each thing as it comes up, each experience, the flow of experience, and not to get too caught up on any one thing. And I think as the practice progresses, it becomes more and more peaceful, and the things we get stuck on tend to become less sticky. So where we do a lot of meditation, and some of us might like to try a half-day retreat if they've been enjoying the Monday night classes and want to take it a little bit further. You find that there's this this kind of flow in the meditation. You don't tend to get stuck so much on particular thoughts. Or I know for myself, as I always used to like music as before I became a monk. So music often will often come up in my meditation, and I know if I've been very busy and just doing monkish things I have to do, and but just being fairly busy, especially when you've got some entertaining guests and that sort of thing. I find that when I sit down to meditate, I might have this just like a refrain or something from a song, and I notice that the more peaceful I get, the those sorts of things, the music tends to fade away. And there's this wonderful word in the Pali, which is used very often in the suttas, and also relating to meditation as well. This word called viraga, and I think the common translation for that is fading away. So we sit in meditation, we just let things fade away. And when I talk about the journey of meditation, you just sit there, you just enjoy whatever's coming through the present moment, and the things that tend to stick in your mind and make it difficult to be peaceful, they tend to fade away. And you'll find that although there's all these sort of thoughts and desires and worries and anxieties and all these sorts of things, the journey of meditation is about just making peace with them, being kind, being gentle. You don't have to do anything. It's just that over time, naturally, the obstacles to peace and happiness, they just fade away. I think you could say that actually that's the whole process of meditation, right through the very deepest states, is just things fading away, even into the jhanas. There's these, Ajahn Brahm likes to talk about the very deep states of meditation, the way they're described in the suttas is about various things just fading away. So these absolutely deep, blissful states, just aspects of them fade away until there's nothing left but pure mindfulness. And although we may not get there tonight in half an hour, it doesn't really matter, because it's like a 30 minute trip, and it doesn't really matter where you start and where you finish, but it's just to make peace and to I think everyone has heard the saying now, there's no such thing as a bad meditation. Everyone's heard that, it's Ajahn Brahm's saying, his teacher's saying, and it's true. It doesn't matter where you start and where you finish, because often in meditation, you might find yourself becoming very peaceful, and then something comes up, some sort of thought, and you can't leave it alone. Our job is just to sit there and relax and let it fade away. This viraga. I've also noticed that with the thinking is probably the thing that most people find is something that hinders them in the meditation. And I keep saying, as even Ajahn Sujata once said, thinking is what the mind does. So don't feel bad about it. But these thoughts are all of a kind. So they can all be let go of. So even if you sitting there in meditation and you suddenly come up with a final solution for climate change, or something that'll win you the Nobel Peace Prize, or something very pleasant, or something that's very unpleasant, all of their thoughts are of a kind, and we can let them just fade away, and don't give them any value at all. Yeah, so. That's a few thoughts. Does anyone have any questions or anything? Or some suggestions or any ideas? No, it's all very... Everyone's just totally understood what I said, and there's nothing else to... nothing else to ask. Well, that's fun. Yeah, we can sit for 30 minutes, and I would always encourage, just to... I remember last time I was talking about this idea of investigation, and to just as you said there, just trying to investigate the mind, to just see how things fade away, just to focus on that. I think Bob was saying that Ajahn Brahm often does like a 5-minute body sweeping at the beginning of each meditation nowadays. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we can probably start with that. And so please relax. Get comfortable. The lights are dim. Please just relax. Take a few moments to settle into the body. Close your eyes. As we take a few minutes just to focus on the body, and just make sure every part of the body is comfortable, relaxed, and at ease. And just feel your feet on the floor, on the cushion. You can just sort of shuffle your feet until you've got the perfect pressure between the floor and the soles of your feet. See if there's any tension in your calves, the lower leg. With kindness, make sure your knees are comfortable, you're not straining them. Just feeling the sensations in your lower legs. Everything okay there? Okay. Let the tension drain from your thighs down through your legs. Through your feet into the floor. Make sure that you're sitting, that your hips are nice and comfortable. You can just adjust your posture if you need to. And relax your lower spine and your belly. Just getting comfortable being at ease. Let the peace flow through the center of your body, center of your chest, up through your lungs, up to your shoulders, Make sure your shoulders are loose. Let the peace flow down through your arms, through your hands, right down to the fingertips. Let your neck relax. Feel your chin just droop a little bit. And the easiest way to relax your face is a little smile. And now you're nice and relaxed. You can let the body fade away, fade away. As we journey to this place we call the present moment, any worries you might have, just let them fade away. Jenny. Your thoughts of the past, thoughts of the future. They're all of a kind. Just let them fade away. Gently, gently. Contentment. To soothe the mind. To be at ease. Even just for a little while. Father, we're coming quite close to the end of the meditation. Where has the mind been all this time? It's taken a short journey, so I hope it's been an enjoyable one. Give you guys a couple of minutes to sip your water and stretch your feet, your legs, whatever needs stretching. So, do you find it helpful to do a bit of body sweeping at the beginning of the meditation?
Yeah.
Good. I know Ashram Brahm likes to give... Wow. Quite a long time ago, so I think, I don't know, probably a guided meditation or a sutta class or something. He was at Nalamar and he said that at the beginning of the meditation, the way one lets go of the body is like coming to the temple. So you drive in the gate and you stop the car where you want the car to be. Get the keys out of the ignition and get out of the car and grab whatever you need, your cushion, and then lock the car and set the alarm, and then you can just forget about it for the next however long, because you know the car is safe and secure. You don't need to give it any attention, and the beginning of the meditation can be like that with the body. It's very helpful to be able to let go of the body early on in the meditation. And I think spending some time just letting the body relax and become peaceful again, beginning the meditation helps in that regard. So, does anyone have any questions? Does anyone have any stories they'd like to share? Yeah, Irene.
Was it my imagination or was people talking in the middle of meditation? Did anybody hear anybody talking?
No.
Let's see.
Okay, hallucinations, awesome. Maybe it was the Davids, maybe just had a quick trip to the Deva Room, I don't know. were they good noises or bad noises?
And when I looked up, you were talking.
I was talking? Well, I think I was the only person talking for the last half hour.
No, this was later on.
Oh, wow, cool.
Near the end.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But other people were talking too.
Oh, that's weird. Cool, okay. That's cool. Things like that can happen. No, sometimes people have some experiences of often the five senses. People often see things all the time, and that's especially on meditation. Ajahn Brahm tells the story of when he was meditating as a young man, and this demon came to him in his meditation. This evil demon, just that picture there, and he had some sort of insight there. He'd seen this image before in a temple somewhere. I know some places in Asia they like to illustrate all of these devils and whatever, and the artwork. And then he remembered that, and he wasn't afraid anymore, so he actually blacked out one of the teeth and drew eyebrows and stuff on it. He was able to work with that really weird vision that he had. But I guess I don't know. So, what else is going on?
I was just wondering if you knew whether people with dementia, can they meditate?
With?
Dementia.
Dementia? Oh.
I was just wondering, because I spent some time with some nursing students in an aged care facility, and there was a dementia unit there. And I found that the patients were very restless.
And
I was just wondering if meditation could help. But then on the other hand, they can't remember a lot of things. Still for very long.
Interesting. I think it could work. It's more, I think, possibly the difficulty would be in just expressing how you want them to practice. I mean, I know with a lot of smaller children, that sort of thing, they often, they don't call it meditation. It's just quiet time, you know? So, it's certainly something you can do. Certainly something you could try. It almost sounds like a great PhD thesis, actually. I had
a very strange experience with that. I had a neighbor who wound up in a nursing home because he couldn't take, he had dementia. And he had expressed an interest in Buddhism. And once he went down to Bodhinyana and got a parking lot, didn't know what to do, and left. But he actually had that intention. So I brought him some Buddhist books. I brought him a Mahayana mala, but he was interested in this group, at Bodhinyana. And so I took back the mala and some of the free books that I gave him of Ajahn Brahms. And he read them over and over and over again, even though he forgot. He did reading. And I admired his persistence. And one day he called me and told me what had happened for him. It was very, very good. He got very, very far. And I went to his funeral and spoke at the funeral and told the family. Because I think it was a comfort, even if they weren't particularly interested in Buddhism. But he really astonished me. His determination was there. And I would go to see him, and he would watch old movies. He grew up in England during the war, and he remembers the bombing of the planes and crashing, the bombers returning from Germany. And he watched movies about that, and he would cry and remember, as a boy, those things happening. And then he turned to me and said, "Have you ever been here before?" I've been here many times. Strange disease.
I mean,
mind and brain has something to do. Difference between mind and brain has something.
I definitely think it's worth trying. I mean, I haven't had much experience with aged care. I wish I had more experience with aged care. But I know from I know from my experience. I mean, I've got schizophrenia, and back in the day when I was learning to meditate, it was kind of said that, oh, you should meditate, but you know, I'm on medication, so I'm pretty normal. I've had no, I can meditate. I've been doing quite well for the last sort of 15 years or so, 14 years, 15 years. So I think it's more of a institutional challenge more than a personal challenge, how you actually introduce the meditation. And I think, just having quiet time, or even
how would you get started?
What about, I mean, maybe a guided meditation would be good, just some tapes you could play. Joking here, you could play it, like you say, you could play the same tape over and over again. And even if they forget it, perhaps it would have some effect on the mind, some sort of even the parts of the brain, I mean, there'll be parts of the brain that are affected, there'll also be parts of the brain that aren't affected. I think the really deep states of meditation, the jhanas, in that state, you know, the I mean, they've actually, I've heard cases where they've, you know, he said, was that one of Ajahn Brahm's disciples, he had very, very bad pain, very bad, I can't remember, it might have been back pain or something like that, chronic pain, terrible, but he went up to Ajahn Brahm one day and said, oh, you know, I flatlined. He said, oh, what, the ECG? He said, no, the EEG. So it seems that in these very deep states of mind, very deep states of meditation, that the brain is just inactive. It's not, there's no, the brain waves aren't there. I mean, this is all anecdotal, but I think that it's quite possible that someone with dementia could actually
switch the computer on.
Yeah, even if it's even if your memory's corrupted.
Yeah.
I think it's quite possible, and I think it's worth certainly worth experimenting with. I understand that obviously there's, you know, ethics involved and all that sort of stuff, institutional stuff, but maybe it'll work. Interesting idea. Yeah.
I read an article about it, something like that.
And
they said music is very good for calming for
hallucinations.
And by playing the music, they didn't have to give so much Valium to keep them quiet or under control.
That's yes. Well, about I don't know. I mean, I know Ajahn Brahm's mother actually had Alzheimer's. It's great. He's actually seen so many people on their in hospital, on their deathbeds, and all sorts of people with all sorts of illnesses. But he says what's very strange with Alzheimer's is that as it progresses, and you know, when they get right to the end, just before death, sometimes they have this period where they just come out of it. They have this complete clarity, and they're, you know, and shortly after pass away. And it's interesting to see what's actually happened there. The brain obviously hasn't just suddenly repaired itself, but it's almost as if the mind is sort of taking its leave of the brain. But I don't know. It's all Ajahn Brahm's stories. They can be fascinating. Yeah. Music's a good idea, or possibly some chanting or something like that. Some sort of something that's reasonably melodious. I mean, I know when I my very first experience of sort of meditation, I was in university studying software engineering at ECU. This is back in about 1999 or 2000 or something, just before I finished my degree, and I was stressed out, as you are in the finishing off a degree. And my mum suggested doing some yoga, so I went down to a place down, might be near Brisbane Street or something like that. Anyway, it's probably long gone, but they would do all the sort of stretching yoga sort of thing, the postures, that sort of thing, which were okay. But what I really liked at the end there was when we just lie down with a pillow, a sort of roll under our head. And I would just play this tape of, Tibetan Buddhist chanting, and just that very guttural sort of one. And I guess with the exercises, where you get the sort of endorphins going through, I found it so peaceful, just to lie there. That was very much my first real experience of meditation. It was with just some sort of, it was just with some Tibetan chanting. It could be something else. Yeah, or I was sitting in the car with John Treasure the other day, and he's very much he's very into China. He loves China. No, you know John.
Yeah.
So we were sitting in the car, and he said, "Oh, do you mind if I play this?" It was just some sort of sort of Buddhist music from the Foguan Tran tradition, and sorry, my Chinese pronunciation is terrible, but they have the big temple up on Guildford Road. Do you know that one in Mainland?
Yeah,
the big place, yeah. Okay. And anyway, he was listening to some sort of chanting, sort of musical chant music from there, and he said, "Oh, you don't mind if I had this?" And, no, it's okay. It was actually quite sort of very peaceful, and quite sonorous, and it was the kind of music or sound backing that would actually allow allow people to be calm. So so maybe there's an avenue there to sort of I don't know how hard it would be to have that, just to sit in silence, but maybe to try some sort of time just to sit, and not really talk or anything, but just listen to something very wholesome and peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that might be the way to go. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Does anyone have any questions that I haven't answered? You'll get a chance next week anyway. But
I'm
good. No, you're looking. You look like that's right. Okay. So we can share the merits of the day.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of Death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, may they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, and surpasses the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and illusion be dispelled.
Thanks everyone for coming, and thank you for a fruitful discussion. And we'll see you next week.